Okay.
Okay.
Winter, spring, summer, fall, seasons change. We still keep it together.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. Are you ready to dive deep? Episode by episode. Storyline by storyline. Character by character. As we break down the making of your favorite zip code. With your host. Charles
Rosen. Did I
say
that?
Jeez. Mary Mullen.
This heinous thing about the real person. And we go, what? We're getting rid of this guy.
Pete Ferrero.
I'm feeling wonderful. Kathleen looks TV crush worthy.
Like so many special guests. And all your questions. Live on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Oh, yeah.
All right, Chuck, how are you? It's good to see you, man. Welcome back to the Beverly Hills 90210 show. We're going way back to season one. You often said on this show, first of all, how are you? How's everything going in your
good, just in the midst of moving, and that's a real not easy. We've been out of the house now for 9 months and trying to get back in like 3 days, and we have some obstacles that just new ones every hour, so just trying to get along. And then, of course, all the political wrangling here in Venice.
We miss you in your basement, you know, in your dungeon, in your lair. Yeah.
I'm up in Karen's world here, right? Exactly.
But we're going heading back to season one. You often said that you did 5 seasons of a television show. And how did you define the season one again for all those that?
How I define season one is most typified by this episode, because I called it the Walsh family series.
That's right.
The Walsh family. That's what we dealt with. Once we finally worked out all the bumps and bruises with Fox, it was, there's a Brandon episode, there's a Brenda episode, there's a Brandon episode, there's a Brenda episode. There were a few exceptions, of course. We had a Kelly episode, and then we had the Brenda Dylan episode, where Dylan became a much bigger factor with Isn't It Romantic? But that was, you know, what we did. That's how we got through the first season, just going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And certainly our guest today was certainly part of that. And the first season was, you know, we also dealt with the first and second season with this, as we've often talked about, the lowest license fee in network television. There was nothing like it. But, you know, who does non-union television shows for a network?
Right.
Dramas, you know, no mm-hmm. one was doing that. So a little crazy.
All right. So I'm going to run an old ad. It's an actual old 90210 ad. I don't know that it's about this episode in particular, but it's an early season thing. And then we'll come back with our guest, Amy Spies, and hopefully Carol Potter as well. I think she's logging into the system. So
okay, great.
Here's that ad.
The Walsh family just moved from the Midwest to Beverly Hills.
Everyone here looks like they just stepped out of a music video. I don't even have the right hair.
Especially, it's really intense. You make one false move and you're history.
Now, the kids have inherited a wealth of problems.
I'm just gonna go back to being my old, uncool self.
And so have their parents.
If this is a day in the life of your basic Beverly Hills family, we're moving back to Minnesota.
Beverly Hills 90210, tonight.
You're really nice.
Yeah, well, I'm from out of town.
Wow, throwback. Hello, Carol.
Hi. Hi, Carol.
How are you? You're in New York, right?
I'm in New York, and this air is poisonous here.
Well, I'm glad you're inside now. We'll tell you when you're allowed to go out again. It's going to be a couple of days, so I hope you can amuse yourself.
What is it like out there? I heard it looks very apocalyptic.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it looks like there's a fog everywhere. You know, the buildings are kind of obscured, and you walk out of the theater and you literally smell smoke.
Wow.
Well, one of the shows today I saw was canceled. The lead actress couldn't, or it wasn't canceled. The understudy had to step in because the lead actress didn't want to do it.
The Broadway show was canceled.
Yeah, Broadway show.
Wow.
What did you see, Carol? Did you see?
I saw last night. I saw Doll's House.
Lovely.
Which was unbelievable. It was so fantastic. I mean, my first reaction was minimalist Doll's House. Maybe not so much. It really took you right into the heart of the play and got rid of everything extraneous. It's an extraordinary performance.
Girl, I got to ask you a question. How many scenes in your acting classes have you done scenes from The Dollhouse, or have you ever been in the play itself?
I don't think I've ever done Doll's House. No, I did Hedda Gabler.
Oh. Did you see something else today?
I did. I saw The Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window. You know, do you guys know Reed Birney?
No.
He was in The Humans. He won a Tony
Award. Oh, I saw The Humans. That was great.
Yeah, he's a wonderful actor. We did Gemini a million years ago, yeah. And he played my younger brother. So his daughter has a role in The Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window. She plays the younger sister of the Rachel Brosnahan character. Mm. And she was lovely. She was lovely, and we met her after, and she has laryngitis. I had laryngitis at one point when I was doing Gemini, and it's awful, you know. And this, we didn't use any microphones in those days.
Right.
So, you know, on the projector, you can barely get your voice out.
She had laryngitis today?
Yeah.
Well, that may have been from the smoke.
Could be.
Well, yeah, it could have been from the smoke too, but I had a sense it had been going on for a little while.
Our friend Maggie reminds us, Carol, happy belated birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
It was a very special birthday.
Oh, okay. What do you want to tell us? Or,
well,
or...
I marked 3/4 of a century.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amy has just joined our decade, but yeah. I've been there for a year, and I'm not too impressed with it. I'm in my 50s, and 60s was, you know, that was a tough decade. I didn't work, you know, I retired early, you know, all that stuff. I liked it better. My physical body is just like, who is this man? Who's this old shit?
I hate to tell you, Chuck, you're not getting any younger.
I know that.
You know, I was just at Amy's in my old haunt too. And
You know, Carol and I had our paths cross a lot. We met at Mommy and Me.
My God, that was so long ago.
My first daughter was in preschool, and your son, And then
this is pre-90210, Mommy and Me.
And in fact, then I guess Chuck or some sent me the pilot of 90210 to look at to see if I'd be interested in helping with the girl characters. And I looked at it and I went, she's in my Mommy and Me group. I don't know if you remember this. And then I came back to the first school and said, Carol, I think I watched you in a show. You know? It was so funny. Yeah.
Wow, it's crazy. Yeah. And then we ran into each other after 90, obviously there was 90210 in there, but then afterwards we ran into each other at a reception or a training for people who are interviewing candidates.
Oh, that's right. I forgot we did.
Yes. And that was the first time we put together that we actually went to the same school.
Right. Because neither of us.
I was going to point out that only really bright women could work on 90210. Jessica Klein, you know, if you didn't. Was a great student. If you weren't a top student, don't even bother. You have to
Chuck Rosen prerequisite.
Much smarter than me, and then you come on in. Come on.
Well, Shannon went to the Lycée Français, which
Shannon
I'm
did.
Jealous.
Oh my!
I don't know if you guys saw Shannon. Shannon is posting a bunch of stuff about cancer coming back and all that stuff. And
I wanted to try to get in touch with her. In fact,
how is she doing?
I don't think great. I saw that she posted a video back from January on Instagram showing that cancer had moved to her. She was getting something done with her head or whatever. So in her brain, I don't want to speak on it because I don't really know too much about it. But of course, we're all thinking about her here.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
Just so talented. I mean, look, talking about this episode, when you look at Shannon Doherty in this show, she has a certain fire and fight in her about what shenanigans Cindy is up to. You know, she's defending her family and her home, and she always sort of knows how to interpret all of that. I think that Shannon does as Brenda.
Yeah.
Amy, I guess this Chuck, this starts with Amy this episode, right? This time around. Where did this episode come from?
Well, it came at a point in the show. You know, we planned them before they went on, and as Chuck was saying, we didn't really know what the show was. And when we first started the show, the network and Aaron Spellinghead didn't have that much, as my memory serves me, to do with it, because it was this kind of show that came out of nowhere. And it was up against bigger shows and networks. And we kind of had a lot of freedom in that way. Mm. And, but it was like, oh, is it a show about the family? Is it a show about the kids? Is it a show about the high school? And so this was, at that time, to be the show about the family, the parents, because they want. And then, you know, what was popular for the, what it really took off was the kids more, I think. And that's a little.
Amy has said it right. The only thing I want to remind you of, Amy, is that we always dealt with the first six episodes. It was the first six.
Right.
We did six outlines. We turned them in. They were all thrown out. They didn't take even one subplot, which is when we learned, what do you mean you don't want a serialized television show? Of course you do. No, they didn't. So, you know, we scrambled and it was the first six. Well, this episode was number seven. And one of the things that really struck me about dealing with a rookie network like Fox at the time was that they took the research that they had out of the pilot episode and treated it as if it was the Talmud. This was sacred stuff that they had learned, secret stuff. And one of them was that people said that they wanted, because if you look at the pilot and especially the 2-hour pilot, not the 90-minute pilot, not the 90-minute pilot with reshoots with Jim Eckhouse, but the original one, and they ask your opinion, and it's all this teenage stuff going on, of course you're going to write down, I need to see more adult action. And they kept telling me that every episode, I don't know if you remember this, Amy, every episode we needed to have an adult subplot. And I just went, well, that's ridiculous. We're not doing that. But at a certain point, it made sense to look at that. And also the idea, and I just have watched the episode with Pete.
Yep.
And what I think it's a really an important episode, maybe as important, I do think that Luke and Brenda becoming, Dylan and Brenda becoming a couple in during the first 12 was real important, obviously.
Very important.
But this one was particularly important because it certified that this family was going to stay together and that they were going to be in California and learn to deal with it. Because, you know, we had made it so clear from the start, especially your character, Carol, was really unhappy being in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, now this is built. You got your couple is not getting along. I mean, Amy is a long time married and I'm long time married. So I never really went through those kind of really fractured moments. We all had our moments and think I got to get out of this and all those things. But it was pretty like, are you guys going to even survive? And I think the dramaturgy, are you even going to survive to the end of the episode? And
go ahead, Amy.
And Eric and Aaron Spelling wanted that, and he wanted, and I don't know if you remember this, Carol or Chuck. Chuck, you probably remember, but he wanted it to be, Carol really wanted, she was saying, can't you please, I have to get out of the house. Can't you just write something? Like, can I get a job? I said, okay, let's get you a job. And Aaron Spelling didn't want her to have a job. And he said, no, you have to change the dialogue to, now that I have your love, honey, I don't need a job. And I went, I don't know if I can do that.
That one didn't, we didn't include that one, fortunately. I don't think that was ever said.
They cut it out, but yeah, they cut it out. I mean, I didn't cut it out.
But
it was like, but you know, that was the, what her character was supposed to be back then. You know, it was a different time. Yeah.
Well, also it really, I was saying this to Pete, this is just a corollary of it. But that, you know, it was really important, that character of, I wanted to, Luisa, because I wanted to show the connection between the Hispanic community of Los Angeles and people in Beverly Hills, if you're going to do that. Yeah. And boy, did Aaron hate that. A once a week cleaning lady? Are you kidding me? You don't want that?
I remember you wanted that. And, yeah. And I watched that episode too. And it was like, yeah, because it was how it was. And I actually modeled it on, you know, my friend who I grew up with, Joy, across the street. Her mom was a lot like your character in a lot of ways. No nonsense. Didn't want that. Was like not what new to Beverly Hills. Did not want any part of that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it really just, you know, was came together so well.
Amy, I wanted to ask you, you obviously wrote this and Chuck just said, you know, where did it come from, the episode itself, and to give Carol or Carol's character this conflict? And
I know that I really liked the movie The Seven-Year Itch, and I was talking to producers about redoing it, a remake of it, and or whatever of it. And it, I loved, and I thought, you know, and I think Chuck maybe had the title of The 17-Year Itch. It was maybe a combination of me and Chuck, but it was also, I think Aaron Spelling wanted a show about the mom and, you know, really focusing on their marriage.
Right. Aaron loved episode six, the one right before this, Perfect Mom, because in our show, the adults do the drugs.
Yeah.
Not just the kids. In our show, the adults have the problem. And I think that what I loved about seeing this episode, there are many things that I loved about seeing this episode. One is back in the 90s, and this, you know, you played mom. So nobody looked at you as, in the context of a, you know, certainly a sexual being.
A MILF?
But you look very pretty. You look very appealing. You were what we'd call later the MILF. There you were. You look great. But our focus group was a kid. So that was one thing definitely picked up. There's another thing that is with Amy, that Amy, when she chose to make it that the guy says I'm going to show you my LA, they go to Venice, they go to my backyard, and you get the whole montage, and then you actually did a scene on the bridge I walk my dogs all the time, you know. So I love that. I remember that Amy, you had some really good friends who lived in Venice. Writing couple. I remember walking the picket line with you and them in 88.
I just walked the picket line with them we went to the app. I walked with Leora at Fox, and we went to the Apple store. Yes, both of them.
It's funny, but I remember that. Yeah, and Amy,
I don't remember them then. No.
And they were kind of hippie people. And I thought, well, Venice, you know, I don't know a thing about Venice. I've never even been to Venice, even though I'm a native like Amy. I never go. Yeah. It's scary to even think about it. And I remember one time Amy telling me, no, I like Venice. I could live in Venice. I live in Venice. Our big encampment just got cleared out today. It was quite a
great news
for a lot of people. And Amy lives in the safety and beauty of the Pacific Palisades. So I'm supposed to live. And I kept saying to the Venice activists, you know, I was supposed to live in the Brentwood or the Palisades. I don't know how I ended up here. But
so wait a minute. You had an encampment there? I didn't realize that.
Oh, a huge. We just had a big, huge encampment right north of the Venice canals, right north of where it had become 40 different. You know, it had been going on and on, and they removed some other ones, but that one got worse and worse. And today they finally went in and returned our shared space to the community.
Carol, when you got this script, there's a lot to talk about here, because I think you were getting married, you said.
I got married right after this episode.
Which is interesting. What did you think when you got this? Because this was going to be something very heavy for your character. You also, as they alluded to earlier, that you didn't really know Cindy all that well yet. You know what I mean? You were still finding her. So talk to me about your experience when you got this.
Well, of course, I was really excited. I was a little nervous because I was getting married. And I thought, I mean, I don't know, this has happened to me on many occasions where I get a piece of work that has some weird connection to my life, you know? And so I thought, I mean, I thought it was great. I loved the storyline because I'm very leery of painting too perfect a picture of whether it's a marriage or a human being or whatever. And I love that there was this challenge in the relationship, because all relationships have challenges, and let's see the reality, right? And it was fun. I mean, it meant Jim and I got to do some fun stuff together. And then I had this whole other guy I got to do fun stuff with. Yeah, I thought it was very thoughtful. And I knew that, you know, I knew Cindy was going to stay with Jim. As the actor reading it, I knew that. But I also knew that it's somewhere in there, Cindy had to really sort of question where she really was, and that this whole experience kind of reinforces her commitment to Jim and her recognition that, wow, she actually did make the right choice. This other guy is very flashy. He's all over the world. But what Cindy really wants is a home and a family and a guy who's there.
Stop it.
You know, I don't think she would have been at all happy with this other guy. But in the moment, it's very flattering. He's coming on to her. He's telling her how beautiful she is and how much he thinks she's great. And, you know, my husband doesn't say that to me as much, right? So that's very flattering, but it's also, you know, she has a strong moral compass. So even kissing a guy that's not her husband, I felt uncomfortable with that. I don't know if I'd go.
Oh, you could have fooled me.
But you know what? But it's a guy. But you know what? I think also, like, I think it's not as much now, obviously. But you know, when you move, the kids, they have their new world. Your husband has a job, and you know, you're just there.
It's exactly. Hard.
And it's not like Beverly Hills is the most inviting place into new people. You know, it's very clicky. Even in the show, it was.
Right, right. And the houses are far apart. It's not really a neighborhoody place.
No, in fact, I made a real point, and it really was not what Mr. Spelling wanted to hear. As I said to him at one point, you know that if people like Jim and Cindy move to Los Angeles now, they would be living north of Montana in Santa Monica. They would not be living. These people aren't moving to Beverly Hills. Who was moving to Beverly Hills? If we took a field trip. I never forget when we took the field trip as a writing team. We went to see the graduation of Beverly Hills High School.
Yeah, yeah.
And Amy and I knew what that looked like because we were both alums. But the rest of the staff didn't know. Darren Star, David Sten, and Jordan Booty. They didn't know. And they were so disappointed because it was so, A, unglamorous, and B, forgive me, but this is what was, you know, extremely Beverly Hills had become a Persian community, at least in the high school.
Yes.
Of that.
Yes.
So it, you know, was not what was anticipated and put out there. And we kind of created an illusion of what Beverly Hills was. And I made a point in those years, because the high school kids were really angry at us when we first came on the air and saying that we weren't truly depicting what their high school experience was like. And I said, well, it's not just Beverly High. We're doing Crossroads and Palisades and, you know, all the Brentwood School and all the other schools in the area is an amalgamation. That's West Beverly. And then, you know, but.
I don't know if the guys ever told you this story. Luke and Ian and Jason were out, you know, hanging out and got accosted by some kids from Beverly Hills High. And so Luke goes, so what kind of car do you drive? And what, and you know, they're all driving the total top of the line cars, like, you know, Porsches and BMWs and stuff. And they just said, we rest our case. You're all driving incredibly elite and expensive cars.
No, it's funny, you know, Amy and I went to high school in a period of time that was, it was Beverly High, but it was decidedly anti-materialism. It was the very end of the 60s, early 70s. Nope. Yeah. I think there were a handful of girls in my grade, all went to El Rodeo, all north of Sunset. They all drove the Porsches and BMWs.
I never had a car. car. I didn't have a car till I got my mother's car after she died when I was 29. It was my first car. I never had a car. My sister didn't have a car.
I didn't have a car until I came to Los Angeles.
It wasn't all like that. I mean, the Walsh family was supposed to not be that.
Exactly. Exactly.
But we also, at the day we went to the graduation, someone said, wouldn't it be funny if we'll start a clothing, there'll be trends, they'll start wearing, because the show wasn't on the air yet, I don't think, you know, we'll start a trend of it. And, you know, who would have thought?
Oh, who would have thought? I know.
A big player in this whole thing, and I'm going to show a couple clips, is the Glenn. The actor, I think, is Stan Ivor, is his name. Amy, were you a part of casting him at all? Were you in the room?
Yeah, for the episodes you write, the way Chuck did it, because he was the executive producer, I think I was there for the casting of the shows, and I think we all sort of had a say so with Luke because he came up, but we weren't. So I was there for that, and then with the woman who got cast in the as the twin study, then became the principal,
Denise Dowse. Yes, yeah. We all just absolutely love and just passed away. Great. You know, so which is
just
so
recently, yeah,
yeah, just recently.
Did you know that Carol Denise passed away?
I didn't know that. I saw her. You know, I saw her at Luke's memorial, but I was so glad she got cast in that role because that was also hard to do with that in that
era. Oh, and she was great. And now the twin story, we talked about, where did this story come
from? I just wanted to ask
wait,
real quick, Chuck.
Amy.
I just want to ask Amy about casting Glenn and were there other people that you saw there? What did you like about him? And Carol, also, what did you think of working with Stan?
I don't really remember exactly. I just remember I thought he looked the part for sure. And he was kind of soft-spoken and looked like he could be a National Geographic kind of photographer in that way. Yeah. I think he was the best of everybody we saw, as I recall.
And that's the caveat. You know, we just didn't get, I mean, when someone like Anne Gillespie walked in the door in Perfect Mom, that was like, oh my gosh, look at this woman, you're cast. You know, we didn't get a lot of the top-notch
in that era
working actors in LA at that point. Looking back now, if in that role, you know, if there would have been an actor who came in, and don't take this the wrong way, people, but look a little more like you, if I have a beard and darker hair, I would have gone for someone who really presented a bigger contrast to Jim. Because we made a little fun of it. You know, the wardrobe in the first 12 was just crazy. It was this lady had it. So he wears I have this shirt on. He wears a tie to dinner. Who wears a tie to dinner in Los Angeles?
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that Aaron wanted everybody to be beautiful.
Yes.
And he was involved on that level early. He got more and more involved, right? But he was always involved with everybody has to look really pretty.
Carol, your perspective of working with Stan.
He was lovely to work with. Yeah, we had a nice time. He was very warm and had a real, very romantic sort of air about him. Mm-hmm. He was easy to work with. My memory is, though, that the show ran long because he took a lot of time with his lines. Am I right?
A lot of air in the room. Yep. A lot of air to be sucked out.
A lot of air. But it was great. You know, they were filled moments, but it sort of...
That's when...
We got to tighten
this. This is television.
That's when I learned the expression from Duke Vincent, butt cuts.
Yeah.
Does that mean, Chuck? What does that explain?
Cut it is... Once one line finished, the other's right there. One line finished, the other, you just take the air out between
tight,
them.
Tight, tight. Yeah.
And we had to do it. And
he would laugh at everything you said, and there would be a pause, and you know, that's
a lot of pauses.
Yeah.
A lot of eye contact.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at you and Glenn.
Who's a success? No, really. You have a family, stability. These are all images here, except for you. You go home and I stay and I toast myself.
There are plenty of beautiful glasses for the great artist to clink.
Plastic ones. You get past a certain age, the great women get taken. I've worked hard, now I find myself alone. I'm ready to settle down, but I'm not willing to settle, Cindy.
Too bad Jim missed you here in your glory.
You're the one that got away. We could be in the midst of a great adventure in the Himalayas.
Freedom fantasies. I could just see me riding on a camel or with a ring in my nose and bells in my toes. Jim would just die seeing me like that.
Wow.
Carol, you were great in that scene. He was amped. He was fine.
Exactly.
You were great.
No offense to Stan, but
he was fine.
He's okay. He's okay.
You really, really.
But also, let's praise a moment of writing, too, since the writer happens to be joining us here, because that moment where she and you delivered it with very hard transition right there. When you have to say, you bring up Jim. Oh, he's just talked about, I want you forever, basically said in so many words, I want you, and you bring up Jim, you know, and the way you did that so naturally. But the way, and when watching the episode yesterday, where Pete and I kept saying, well, the scene tried to put this out, and they did. Every scene that you guys that were in this piece was accomplished.
Yes.
And there were one or two times, maybe there were more tears than we would play today. But again, a marriage is falling apart. There's going to be tears.
Do you remember shooting that scene, Carol?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember we were outside. I remember the dress. I loved that dress.
Yeah, you looked pretty in it.
Yeah, it was. I remember that scene especially, and the scene on the bridge especially. And then there was another scene.
As an actor, Carol, I have to ask.
Struggle with that back and forth thing. What do I do?
You said before that you were getting married. So personally, you are going to be getting married and you have a lot to look forward to. And then you're in this storyline, which is a marriage falling apart. You're kissing this man. How do you get here as an actor for people that are watching that? What is your process to get to this place?
Oh, gosh. How can I even remember? Well, I think, you know, I had been married before. And so Spencer's presence, I can always call upon, both in terms of that sense of long-term commitment, even though the marriage didn't last long, and of, you know, someone that I wanted who's not there anymore. I've been imagining myself, you know, in relationships since I was in first grade. I married three different boys. So I think this whole sense of being in relationship was something I'd always imagined very vividly to myself. And so I don't know. Well, and don't forget, I had a 3-year-old at home and I'm playing the mother of teenagers. So that was, you know, Jim and I used to talk about what a leap that was in terms of like trying to project into our futures. But that experience, that sense of being in one of those relationships that feels so solid and so secure, and also has those moments when you think this person has no idea who I am. You know, what am I doing here? I mean, I've had all of those kinds of experiences. And, you know, you just kind of string that knowledge together so that it sort of comes out as one piece, as if it's all one relationship, right?
It's really beautiful stuff, Carol. It's really, really nice. And our friend Dorkzilla, her name is Sarah. She says, Carol, you were so gorgeous here. When I was 14 and first watched this, I wanted to look just like you as a wife and a mother. So just really...
Thank you.
Beautiful. Amy, what about you writing this dialogue?
Oh, I love writing, you know, the Himalayas. I have a lot of family members who have been in the Himalayas. Some still are there. And so Gary's brother. So.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Will.
He's a guru in Goa now. But they Anyway, so I sort of saw that. I thought it was interesting. And I kind of, I've related to those feelings. I was, you know, a new mother also, like Carol.
That's right.
And so it wasn't really that as much as I just liked the idea. I was really interested in a woman who was displaced, even though with a, and a wonderful mother and loved her husband, but she was struggling to find herself here, you know, and I thought that was a great thing to write about.
And I think, Amy, you really captured that sentence, that the whole sense of you move to a new place and the wife and mother is left in the house. She doesn't have ways to connect with other people. And so especially in that context, when somebody comes from your past, it can feel like, oh, this is what I've been missing. This is my connection to real life. And it doesn't feel like real life anymore because I'm stuck here and everybody else is out there living and meeting new people. And this now this feels like, okay, this could be for me, right?
And also, you know, it's funny, Amy is a real wordsmith. I mean, she, you are. And so I remembered watching the thing and that, that the freedom fantasies. And I'm yes, that was the
such a great phrase,
which just coming up with that freedom fantasies.
Fantasy, yeah.
Then was, it was completely the subtext of the entire episode being expressed. So if somebody wanted to, you know, get what really is going on, that's what it is—a woman's fantasy. What else I could be doing? And you know, and so I always admired that, those kind of things. And I think if those super fans who would go through the various episodes that Amy wrote in season one, you'll find those in every single one. A phrase here and two that would work as a, in a novel or a motion picture or wherever it would be, because Amy's a full scale writer. It doesn't
thank you. You know, the thank you, Chuck. That's really appreciated and sweet. At the I thought first episode that I wrote was, you know, Cindy was like the mom who helped everybody and the mom who they had other Tiffany character was.
Yes.
Had, and so she had all that, but I thought she should have, and Carol thought she should have, and Chuck thought she should have, that she should be able to have show her whole self and not, you know, what her needs were also. I thought.
Amy, the other thing too I wanted to ask you is, you know, you write this beautiful dialogue and then you see it and Carol delivers it. You never know what's going to happen when you write dialogue and an actor delivers it. This was what did you think of this when you,
When I saw it, there was so much. I mean, you know, I can't read anything I've written, really. I can't, I don't like watching things particularly that I've, you know, I wrote the movie Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And whenever it's on, I'm like, oh God, you know, and it's getting, it's actually getting amazed, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe it. You know, so I have a very strange thing, attitude about what I've written, but I will tell you that watching this now, I don't remember how it was then, but now I watched the scene and I got my genuine reaction. I thought she was incredible in the scene. Incredible. And he was good, but her complexity, because she was the one that had the complexity.
Right. It was definitely hers.
Devil in it all, you know. So that was her, and it was beautifully done.
Right. And for me, it was a very, you know, the production was very stressed at this point. We had changed producers. And Paul Wagner stepped in and Jeffrey White left. And so in this period, we noticed when we went back to the credit, nobody's credited as the blind as the creative producer on this. Neither of them were. It really fell in the middle. And it was really true in our experience, even with some of the episodes that whether you know, some popped this way, some popped this way. We got almost no love from our network in the first 12. Almost none. I mean, a little here and a little there, so that every episode that would come in, because we weren't getting great ratings.
Right.
And we also knew that, and was pretty clear being told, well, if Fox had anything, Butler, I'm talking. if Fox have had anything to replace us with, they would have at that point. Our ratings were so low. But
yeah.
they, ended up liking our material. And even Barry Diller had to acknowledge in the beginning and say, yes, they're doing good episodes, but does it belong on our air? And he was not wrong saying that, because what he wanted and what Rupert wanted and all these people wanted was a little boys network. And we were doing a more sophisticated under the parameter of a spelling show and a Fox show, an exploration of teenage life, family life. And it meant a lot to me. And certainly we pushed it through that we were not going to make it when we dealt with teenage sexuality, that the only choice that a young girl had was to be a Madonna or a whore. That was not where we were going to be going through. And to even have that kind of conversation was not what Fox was about.
Right.
Especially then.
Well, it was so interesting. They had this reputation for being so daring. And yet I felt like they were just constrained us in so many ways.
They were daring in marketing terms, but not in content terms. Yeah.
A few comments here. Brian says, I love Carol's performance there. The delivery was immaculate. Georgia says that you're the best TV mom, hands down. Joe says that this was beautifully written.
Thank you, Joe.
So lots of nice things being said. I want to talk about someone else that's really important in this episode. It's, you know, James Eckhouse as well. And I have a scene here of James and Carol, I think is just incredible.
Well's done.
Honey, don't hurt their feelings. This is really very sweet of them.
How are we going to make it to Glenn's photo session on time?
I feel weird even going, but it'll give Mom and Dad some time alone.
Are they talking?
They're not.
Here, put some of these carrots on here.
It's weird how suddenly we can't even talk to each other.
Or be with each other. I have a vague memory of what sex is like.
Honey, what do you expect? I mean, you come home from the office and you're so absentee. Nothing is lonelier than being in bed with someone you feel alienated from.
Listen, I am in over my head here. I've been in over my head since we moved here.
Then slow down. I don't care about big houses and keeping up.
You think I like killing myself like this? And I know it's not as glamorous as what Glenn is doing.
Stop hiding behind your damn work.
Look, I brought us out here. I'm not going to let you down.
Honey, the only way you're letting me down is by being absentee from you and me.
Cindy, it takes two. You're not exactly around here these days either. I'm sorry. I've got a mountain.
Wow.
That's a lot of, again, the wordsmith, the idea that if you notice the sentence when she says, you know, you're absent, and it, then it was, it's an absentee in there. And the use of that word absentee didn't have to say, like, when you come home and you blah, 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 blah. It was a way to cut short and know exactly what was there. It's a very wonderfully constructed scene. And then you repeated the word absentee. Very, very moving. And I love that Jim had to admit, I'm over my head. We finally learned that an adult is like, I'm over my head here. I'm barely hanging on. Very interesting stuff, I think.
And you know, it was, I look at it and I think, no, that's not the direction the show did go in. But it was a really, if that were a show where they really did the, you know, where it was focusing on that and really having the parents be real, you know, characters that were not just sort of parent figures and the, you know, the neighborhood parents, that it would have, it was really honest.
Right. I think too honest for the powers that be, because once they saw what an adult show would look like, they went, you remember them calling me up at one point and saying, okay, you've done all the social drama we've asked you for and the family drama. Why don't you do something light? And that's when we did, speaking of Brenda before, Laverne and Jason getting his job in Hollywood. You know, that's, they wanted a comedy, and then then they almost didn't let us air it because they didn't think it was believable, because it wasn't, you know.
Yeah, they never know what they want because it just, I mean, you know, that's how that goes. But that's Carol, exactly. I also thought her character, she was like such a great, direct, no-nonsense character. And you really delivered it because it would be brave for your character to say all that.
Yeah. Well, and but when the stakes are high, you've got to go cut to the chase. You know, you can't sort of keep dancing around the point if you really want something. I mean, that's when I think in a way when by being so honest, I mean, what she's really saying is I want you.
Yeah. Right.
You. I don't care about your job. I don't care about, you know, what your job can bring us. If we're not here together, then there's nothing here for me.
Yeah.
Amy, I do want to ask you about the twin study storyline as well, which is where you mentioned that we see Denise Dallas and she eventually becomes really important in Mrs. Teasley in the show. Where did the idea of the twin study come from?
I don't know. Do you remember, Chuck? I don't even remember. Really.
Yeah, you came in and said I was reading something. Yeah, she's we always said she reads, she knows stuff, and that was the thing, you know, to bring in. I've got this idea. How can we work it in? And it was just it was really perfect. And then the other twins being the identical twins and fraternal twins, and I loved that even in the storyline, although it's not the focus, that the idea that they think they did badly. Because they didn't because of the notion, did we even behave like twins? You know, how are twins supposed to behave? You know, who knows?
Well, I thought it was interesting. I love the idea that, you know, obviously we didn't create the idea that they were twins. The creator of the show, Darren, did. But I love the idea that they're twins. I am fascinated with twins. And Chuck's right. I did read a lot of twin studies. And I studied psychology. There's a lot of twin stuff. And I'm still fascinated with twins. Fascinated with them. You know, I find it really interesting. And so, yeah, how does that do it for them? How does that affect them? Because they're so brother and, I mean, I think that the dynamic between Brenda and Brandon is really, really interesting. And obviously was the heart of the show too, but it sort of.
Especially in that first season and the work between the two of them is so wonderful. Like I totally buy that they're brother and sister and that they go through all of this stuff together as a family. Like there's something really amazing happening with the Shannon and Jason in these early years.
Yeah. They really share their perspectives with the parents and it's almost like they see it as their job to sort of keep track and make sure everything's, you know, on an even keel. And when one of them is thinking something's off, they go to their twin to kind of work it out and talk about it. I mean, I know I had older brothers and we always talked about what was going on in the family, but you know, when we were a little bit older, like maybe when I was in college and they were both graduated from college, but you know, the fact that they're doing it in high school just, I think is just because they're so much more sophisticated than I was when I was in high school.
And they're twins.
And they're twins, exactly. Right. Yes.
Chuck, do we have time for one more scene or do you need to?
Let's do the scene and then I'm going to have to pay. Thank you for that, Pete. I'm sorry. You know, everybody moves to, when they move to Venice, they all say the same thing, Amy and Carol. I moved here to just kind of play and catch waves. And all of a sudden I'm an activist and I go to meeting after meeting after meeting. So I've got one of those things that I am obligated to.
It's been great to see you. Yeah.
Big community there. Yeah.
I was going to say there is a great scene where James Eckhouse goes and confronts Glenn. And I was going to show that, but I'll show the last scene with Carol and Glenn to end this episode and get some final thoughts on this.
Thanks, Pete.
We did have a mental affair.
Past tense, huh?
Very nice past tense. I never intended it. You just made me feel so damn special.
Glad to be of service.
I really like you. But I really love my husband.
I know. I just wanted to say goodbye. I had a visitor from the better part of my conscience this morning. He made me realize I couldn't break into your family even if I wanted to.
Yeah.
Well, I'm headed off to an assignment in Canada. It's real healthy here for transplanted growth. You and Jim will do just fine.
And there you have it. Thoughts on that, Carol?
Well, I remember they had me in a black turtleneck, and we were shooting so late, it was so dark that all you can see is my face.
The smallest license fee in network television, that was what we were. But the idea that you isolate exactly what's going on, which is in these things, it's the mental affair.
Yes.
Fantasy of it that is what's so potent / dangerous.
Yes.
I don't think we were talking about mental.
Amy found the exact words to describe what that was. So,
but we weren't even.
Mental affairs are very seductive for women.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
And we weren't even talking about that back at this time, though. No. Nowadays, I think with social media and everything else, I think it's way easier to get caught up in a mental affair, right? Probably. But this time, it was not something that we were all talking about.
I think they had, yeah. Well, I do want to say something that somebody, I went on the Jenny and Tori have a podcast, and I went on their podcast to talk about music, and particularly how we've been eviscerated, and I find the show pretty the episodes that are being presented today pretty unwatchable, contrasted with what we did and when we had the original music that we did. And somebody, their host, said that her least favorite year was season one. And I think that's because she likes serialized storytelling. We weren't doing it. But she also said stuff is really dated. And I said, well, wait a second. The second episode we did was about shoplifting. And Tori and Jenny are nodding. They remember that. Yeah. And I said, and in that, if you look at that closely, written by Amy Spies, that she talks about white privilege.
Yeah.
I told that woman, we were talking about white privilege in 1990. That's it might look dated. It might, the camera work be different. But the content was way ahead of its
time. Totally ahead of its time. Yeah. Taking risks and dealing with, like, the Matthew Perry episode.
Yes.
You know, or Chris Isaacs. This Chris Isaacs song, I think, was in this episode that we're talking about.
Yeah, one of them was. And certainly,
it was a really early. It was way before that song got really big.
Exactly.
I know Chuck has to go. A couple of quick things. Dorksil again says, I love this episode so freaking much. It was authentic, genuine, and vulnerable. I felt everything. It also set the trajectory of many characters. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Our friend Zara said something, but I just wanted, I know it's her birthday. I don't really, can't find what she said. So happy birthday, Zara. We all love you here very much. Carol, can you give Zara a happy birthday?
I'm sure happy birthday, Zara, and many, many more.
I'm sure that will make her day. Okay, this has been great, Chuck. You know, you're off to go do some politics.
Yeah. Good to see you both. Amy, if you ever have a class that you need a friend to show up and yak with you, let me know.
Oh, I will. Yeah, that would be great.
That'd be fun for me.
And Amy, there's more episodes we'd love to cover with you, so please come back and
yeah, we've never done the one where the network forced us to not do poetry and instead.
Oh yeah, that one.
So we should jump into that together. And
Carol, both of you, Aunt Carol and Amy, the work here is incredible. I'm so grateful that you both joined us here today to talk about this because I think it's really important stuff, and you both delivered something to my generation that we still care about 32 years later or whatever, 33 years later now. So it's pretty incredible.
Tell me.
All right, everybody. You all have a good one. All right.
See you later.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks. Good to see everybody.